It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you all. It's Tuesday the 10th of January. I'm Ronan Berry and this is Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Good to be back for 2023. I must say a massive thank you to David Hollywood for giving me an extra few days off this side of Christmas as well. And what a fabulous job he did last week. So I'm back in the hot seat tonight. And as always, I have lots of stories and lots of good content coming up for you, including Barry Kennedy is the general manager of the County Arms Hotel in Birr, and he's also the chair of the Midlands branch of the Irish Hotels Federation. And they've recently written an open letter to all elected officials outlining the challenges that the sector faces, including the 9% VAT rate and why they believe that the 9% rate must be retained in order to support that sector. It, of course, comes on the backdrop of rising energy costs, rising operating costs in general, shortage of staff, huge issues in terms of tourism and international travel and all that kind of thing as well. So Barry will take us through all that later on, as well as talking about the County Arms itself. It's been family owned since 1962, a fabulous venue in Birr. So very much looking forward to that a little bit later in the show. Also, I'll introduce you to Ollie Green, and Ollie's the founder of Mullingar's betterplants.ie. They provide seaweed-based organic gardening and farming fertilisers and also the supplements as well. It's a fascinating business, and how do you link seaweed and the Midlands and a fellow who used to be a carpenter? Well, you'll find out in about 15 minutes time here on Taking Care of Business. If you want to join the conversation this evening, you can do so as always by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103, or you can email business@midlands103.com. But to begin this evening, and I suppose for me to begin this year, I want to focus on, you know, the challenges that are there for many businesses. And it's been widely reported that this could be a record year in terms of insolvencies for businesses. Now, it happens every year. It's a very natural thing. There's a natural attrition rate for businesses. But on, you know, the back of all these looming price rises, energy costs, etc., what can businesses do and what items or what things should they be looking at in order to try and safeguard their business as well? Reviewing your credit terms, those that you have with your customers, is a key thing. And I'm going to throw it out there and say it's sometimes, I think, Irish companies and Irish people don't do very well. We're inclined to be a little bit lax maybe and let people off sometimes. Certainly vastly different from what happens in other countries, particularly those in Central Europe. So to dig more into this, I'm delighted to be joined by Sharon Farrell. And Sharon is the founder of Face Credit Consultancy, and they provide adaptable credit solutions to increase the speed at which your business gets paid from customers. Sharon has worked across all aspects of professional credit management for over 25 years now, and indeed has experience in both France and Germany, and believes we can learn a lot from these companies. But Sharon is here this evening to really talk about some timely tips and advice for businesses for the year ahead. A very good evening, Sharon.
Good evening, Ronan. How are you?
Sharon, this whole area of credit control and looking at the credit terms that companies have in place, it's hugely important. It's possibly the most important thing a company needs to look at. How good and how well do Irish businesses do?
We're not great when we compare ourselves to the rest of Europe, in particularly Germany, Holland. They have a much more stringent approach to credit terms. So if they say 30 days from date of invoice, that's exactly what it means. In Ireland, 30 days from date of invoice could mean 30 days month end or 60 or 90 days. So we're a little bit behind the curve, and that some of that is cultural, because we have those personal relationships with our clients. But it does have a huge impact on cash and on how businesses run and how liquid they are. So, yeah, we're not great in comparison to other European countries.
Are there some sectors that are, you know, maybe more lax than others?
Yeah, the agri sector are quite lax. Construction too, that can always be difficult. So they're the two that I would note would struggle when it comes to implementing those credit terms with their clients.
Yeah.
And the money can sometimes be large amounts, which can have a huge impact on their business.
Absolutely. In a former life, I worked in construction, and it was actually a sport. I think we could have competed at Olympic level in it in terms of trying to avoid, you know, I think that was a two-way street as well. It went for both, you know, for both the supplier and indeed and the customer too. And it was blood sports a lot of the time as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, any business owner and any successful business owner that I've ever heard speak talks about cash flow and the importance of cash flow, maintaining that cash flow and indeed managing it as well. And this is something that you at Face Credit Consultants, you do a lot of advice and give you a lot of guidance on.
We do. Like, it really is the lifeblood of the business. If you don't have cash, you won't survive. And we would see, I saw in 2008, 2009, when we really were in difficult times, that the cash was king. And the businesses that held on to cash or that had a buffer there were the ones that survived. We'll see the same, I think, this year. So managing your cash flow and getting money in is really, really important. It's what you do between for this year. So start as you mean to go on. Don't leave your clients because you have a good relationship with them not pay you, because if things go wrong and they liquidate, that can really have a detrimental impact on your business. So it really is important to take an overview of what your credit terms are in your business. Make sure that they're in line with what your business needs. So some businesses can afford to give their clients 60 days credit terms, but not all businesses can. So it's really taking a deep dive into your finances. How long can you afford to wait for your customers to pay you, and then implement that into your business? So, you know, look to have that money paid on time and in full. That's really, really important. You shouldn't let your client dictate to you when they're going to pay. It really needs to be something that's working for your business.
The SME sector in this country alone, like, it is absolutely massive and employs over a million people at present. Are businesses inclined to just give the standard 30 days without putting any consideration on it?
Absolutely, because I think there's an expectation out there. So do negotiate before. What I would say to everybody is, before you enter into any agreement with a potential client, do the deep dive into your business, work out what the preferred credit terms are for you, and then have that conversation with your client. Don't just assume that 30 days is the standard, because 30 days in this country, really, Ronan, is 60. It means they'll pay you at the end of the following month, and that's 60 days. So it's to be very clear at the point of sale about what your expectations are.
And is there
14 days is a possibility, 45 days is a possibility, 10, 15. So it doesn't have to be the standard 30 days. It can be something else.
And is that as well something that can be actively reviewed? Again, can businesses look at the credit terms they have, and if they maybe have a customer on 60 or 30 or even or 90 and maybe do want to reduce the credit time, is that something that other businesses then are happy to engage in a conversation in, or again, do we just shy away from that type of thing?
Yeah, people do shy away from it because they think that it's going to cause conflict between them and their customer. What causes conflict is if the communication isn't clear and people are not having that conversation. And then when you get under financial pressure as a business and you're looking to collect outstanding invoices, if you're under financial pressure, it's a different conversation that you're having. So you're better off to have the conversation early on. Like, the beginning of the year is an ideal time to have a look at this and renegotiate the terms with your clients. So organise a meeting, either face-to-face or on the phone or on Teams, where you're openly discussing, you know, that the credit terms you have in place are no longer working for you, and what can you do to bring them back in line with something that's going to work for your business. Most people, when you're having that conversation, will be open to it. If it's then when you're under pressure at a later time and you need that cash in, it's a different conversation, because maybe you're under pressure, you're going to come across with a different tone, and that's where the conflict comes in with customers.
Of course, part of that due diligence could be actually just reviewing the actual or the more precise terms of that credit agreement, because 30 days for one person could have a different meaning for the other company or the other side of the agreement.
Yeah, that's it. As I said, 30 days from date of invoice, 30 days from month end, 30 days from the date they registered the invoice. So it means different things for different companies. So you have to be very, very clear in your contract what your credit terms are, and start as you mean to go on. It's easier to start off on the right foot with a client and say, this is how we do business, than 5 or 6 years later to go back and say, actually, we know your credit terms were 30 days, but you've been paying 90, and we'd like to bring that back in line. But still, that's not impossible to do, and it's important to actually do it.
But for any SME, like, for any small or even micro business, though, like, if you're not getting the credit, that money in, that cash flow in quickly, and you start looking at alternatives like an overdraft as well, you're going to be hit with quite high rates then, even on that money.
Yeah.
So it really is, it's a double whammy.
That's what we see. So we would see a lot of customers, They have a really viable business. They're providing an excellent product or service to their clients. And they're looking at their margin, maybe 40% margin or 30 or 10, whatever it is. But if they're tapping into an overdraft facility because they're waiting 90 days, that's at 8%. So that 8% is coming off your margin on month one, month two and month three. So you're quickly eating into your profits. And people aren't seeing that when you're offering credit, you're actually loaning the money. And if it's eating into your profits, then it's having a detrimental impact on businesses. So they really need to start seeing the credit facility in their business is like a loan to their customers. So it can't drag out because credit costs money, and it really, really will. It's impacting profits. And when things are tight, and we know we've seen increase in fuel costs, energy costs, when they're increased and then your profit margins are dropping, that's where businesses are going to struggle. And that's where we'll see, I think, a lot of businesses under pressure this year.
Again, I think a lot of people will probably empathise with this, but across in continental Europe, they're quite quick at revoking credit terms if needs be. Something, again, I'd say, which in this country doesn't happen too often and only in very extreme circumstances, because I think often it's felt as kind of a personal attack at somebody for doing so.
So that's what I would say to people is you need to have review before you do business with anybody. You're going to have a good deep dive review, good contract and in place, and ideal credit terms to your business. But the second part is to have a good credit management process in your business and somebody who's actively going to collect money on your behalf. So somebody in your business that's going to manage that piece. Don't, no matter the size of your business, even if you're a one-man band, get somebody else in or set size a time aside yourself to review the debtor's ledger and collect that money. Because if you let it go and you're not asking, you're not going to get paid. Unfortunately, we do need to make those phone calls. We do need to remind our customers to pay us. It doesn't magically come in, unfortunately. So that's something that has to happen. We have to be continually, you know, managing our credit, phoning and contacting our clients all the time.
I think you're giving people plenty of advice and tips there, and great way to start off 2023. Just briefly, Sharon, in terms of the intervention or a typical intervention that Face Credit Consultancy do with a company?
So what we offer three services. So we have a consultancy side of our business where we will go and take a deep dive in and give you ideas on how to improve what it is that you're doing, best practices in the industry. We give you ideas around what the credit terms in your industry are throughout Ireland. So if it's 30, 60, 90 days. And then we have training where we'll actually train your staff on how to make effective telephone calls. That's been a big seller for us this year because I think a lot of people realise that there's a skill in that and you do need to actually pick up the phone and talk to people. And then finally, we offer outsourced credit control where we will actually collect on your behalf, but we will use your brand name and act as you. So it's not like a debt collection agency. It's something completely different. It's actually credit management service. So that's what we're offering for our clients. The beauty of that is, Ronan, that we get to see all sectors and we get to see what's going on the front line.
I think that degree of separation is huge. I've known of very, very small businesses in the past where there would be a fictional Mary or Imelda in accounts that,
yes,
you know, and it was different, and Mary or Imelda were never in the office when it came to collecting a cheque, but nobody would argue with Mary or Imelda because they didn't want to get angry with the lovely lady in accounts. Always complete and utter spoof, but anyway, such as
sometimes you just need to do what you need to do, but
that's exactly it.
To have that degree of separation, it's very difficult if you're a small business to sell to a customer, to service them and then phone them to look for the money. So it's easier if you have somebody else, and it doesn't necessarily need to be an outsourced company. It could be somebody else that you employ on a part-time basis to, you know, actively telephone your customers, collect your outstanding invoices, and it just will help you survive this year. You know, you'll sleep easier at night knowing your money is in your bank than in your customers.
Absolutely. No doubt there's plenty of challenges coming. But for now, Sharon Farrell, founder of Face Credit Consultancy, thank you so much for that advice this evening.
Thank you, Ronan.
And if you want to find out more about Sharon's company, it's simply www.facecredit.ie, and you can check out all the various services and the key offerings that Sharon just detailed there a few minutes ago. Coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes' time, The Midlands branch of the Irish Hotels Federation has written to elected officials just outlining their concerns for the sector and looking at key items like the 9% VAT rate for that sector as well, about retaining that beyond February of this year in order to support the sector that, like a lot of sectors, is facing huge challenges and given, you know, rising costs and increasing competitiveness and lack of employment, all that type of stuff as well. But more to come on that a little bit later. But first, diversity, I suppose, is one thing. It's way more than a pivot as well. But I'm going to introduce you now to a guy who used to be a carpenter. He's from Daleystown in Westmead, and he now supplies seaweed-based fertilisers for both, you know, home gardening, to the farming sector, to the horticultural sector as well. And so where do you start, I suppose? Ollie Green from betterplants.ie. How did you end up bringing seaweed to the Midlands?
Yeah, I suppose, Ronan, it all started, I suppose. It was, a combination of two passions of mine. One was gardening. You know, I used to be growing my own vegetables. I grew up growing our own vegetables and that. So when I was looking for a fertiliser, a good organic, natural fertiliser, something Irish, you know, I used to go into the gardens. I couldn't find what I was looking for. And honestly, it was frustrating me because I just, everything I could find just had organic on it, but wasn't, you know. So again, I do a lot of surfing. So as we used to go down to myself and mate Dave used to go down to Sligo every other weekend, so we started filling barrels of seaweed, bringing it back up, making my own liquid, and I could see the results. Like the plants were thriving, the garden was thriving, and I was giving it to a few friends. And one lady said to me one day, I was just putting them into old bottles of water or anything else, just to, because we had so much of it. And one woman said to me, "You should bottle that and sell it." And I was like, "I'm just a carpenter. What the hell would I know about seaweed business or starting a business from scratch?" So I got thinking about it again, and I was looking, and there was a bit of a demand for it. So we started about looking for labels and bottles and putting together a website. Like you could imagine, like coming from, you know, doing roofs and second fixing and a few lads in the building to complete, you know, 360 on it, you know, and or 180 on the whole life, you know. And I was really passionate about it. You know, I could feel that it was, you know, something inside me said it was the right thing to do and I was going to be making a difference, you know. And I just ploughed ahead then.
So at that point, the, you know, the bottle or the liquid that you were making, was that just purely your own recipe, your own way of doing it? Like, was it kind of trial and error?
That was trial and error, yeah. So we'd come up with that. Like, we did look at, I was very lucky again on another surfing trip. I met a guy who was very well renowned in the seaweed business. He'd been working with seaweed all his life. He'd manufactured another liquid product, so he was well gotten it. So, and he was, suppose, was somewhat of a mentor to me because he was able to give me his advice. And like, I remember him telling me one time, "Look, you're going to hit walls here in this business, like, as you know, especially if you're working with farmers, and this is 8 years ago, and you're trying to convince them that you can grow grass with a liquid seaweed." Like, and he said, "Just keep going because it is the future." He said, "Just keep it going." And I had that belief even through all the tough times and the down times, you know. And he just gave me his, you know, his recipe of what was the right formula to be to make liquid at. And it was then through another joint venture then that we, a company in Donegal then was able to replicate that and make the liquid seaweed for us. So
we that know gave you getting, the opportunity then, yeah, to start scaling the business.
Absolutely, scaling it, yeah.
I suppose we won't even come right up to the current day where, I mean, the challenges there around the price of fertiliser, particularly ammonia-based fertiliser, has probably quadrupled in a short space of time. How did you then, I suppose, to come back a little bit, how did you go about growing your market? Was it, is it largely word of mouth? Because as you say, there's a huge persuasion piece in this for people.
It was, like, with the gardening sector, it was, again, just getting it out there. You know, and I knew, because I used them myself, I knew if I just get the one gardener, one farmer using it, that's all, you know. And I knew just one at a time, I can get one will bring two will bring five, and that's the way it grew. And it was just word of mouth. And then what we started doing as well earlier on, because again it was another thing that was completely alien, I'd done a course in social media, and I remember the lady saying to me, "You need to start doing videos." "No, this is not happening, like, I'm camera shy, and I'm happy enough, you know, doing what I'm doing." And so I started doing little gardening videos, very rough and ready, and sending them out online, and they got a good response. But what we, you know, I think, you know, once we started to give people how to use it, what to do with the products and the benefits of them, it really, really helped. And then, you know, with the farming sector, it was a thing, like, we started doing some agri shows, We're doing gardening shows, pedagogy shows, and just stuff like that. Just anything to get the product out there. And I'd say once one farmer started using it, seeing the results, and farmers are brilliant. Like, I love dealing with them because, you know, they give great referrals. You know, they'll tell your man next door, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, once it's working, and, you know, we've been using the same three products now for 8 years, and we've never deviated. You know, the formula is the same for the three of them, and we're just getting good results with them.
On a scientific level, what's the seaweed doing that, and how efficient is it at replacing, or effective is it at replacing, say, a non-natural, a false alternative, like an ammonia-based fertilizer?
Well, I suppose for starters, like for farmers out there, so if you're using a granular fertilizer, say whatever, the 18-6-12, or most people would know a 10-10-20. So when you spread that on your grass or your land or whatever, the plant is only actually using up 40% of it. So you think of it, every 1,000 euros you're spending on fertilizer, 600% or 60% of it is wasted. It goes in, it evaporates, it goes into the waterways, as the pollutants, the whole lot. So with ours, you're getting 100% absorption rate with it. And that's the difference. So, and with the seaweed as well, what it's doing, it's root development, it's increasing the sugar in the, and it's building up the microbes back in the soil. Because again, artificial fertilizer, being a chemical, kills off the worm population. Like, and one question, like, if you, like, I know when we were growing up, when someone is ploughing the field, there'd be seagulls and crows all around the field. Like, you don't see that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Because there's nothing there for them.
Yeah, do you ever try to dig a garden where I used to live years ago, back in the housing estate, and we went digging one day because the kids had got a little wormery. We could not find a worm. Now, where we live now, total opposite like that. But I think people will, it's things like that sometimes that make people sit up and go, actually, you're right. You don't see that happening now because of the lack of it. Yeah. So it, clearly it's a fantastic substitute. It's actually a better substitute in a lot of ways too. So how do people apply it, like, are farmers, are they buying it in liquid form or in granular form? How does that happen, and how do they typically apply it to the land?
Yeah,
then?
So the farmers are buying it in large quantities, obviously. So, like, a lot of time with the seaweed goes on about 2 litres to the acre, mixed with 100 litres of water. You're putting that on with your regular sprayer. So it'd be the same sprayer that a lot of farmers would have been used to spray pesticides and weeds years ago. Now they're not spraying, thankfully, as much of it, and they're using the seaweed and our liquid nitrogens. And again, I suppose for any new organic farmers out there as well that's just joined organic associations, like, our products are all a certified organic as well, which is a great bonus as well. But it's so easy. And again, I suppose when you come back down to the 60-40, that's the uptake of artificial fertilizers, only 40%. There's 100% absorption rate with ours. So if you think of it, you're getting everything you need. And it's a quarter the price as well, which is obviously, if you... Like, if you say farmer money, they'll vote you as president.
I'd say there's people sitting up listening now after hearing that as well. So you're taking your raw materials coming from Donegal. Is it been farmed up there, or has it been harvested? How does
harvested,
it actually?
Harvested, yeah. So it's all sustainably harvested, and it's all hand harvested. So it's far, like, I've been up there a few times with them, and to go out in the boats and to cut it with hand, and it's brought onto boats and brought into the shore, and it's dried, and it's then, it's, our one is very unique because I suppose a lot of people, like, if you're a gardener, you're a farmer, and you're going, someone is selling you a drum of seaweed, and you see it, and it's really dark brown or it's dark black in colour. That's what you call a chemically extracted seaweed, or it's a heat extracted. And obviously, we all know that if you heat something, it's going to lose a certain amount of goodness. Ours is olive green in colour. It's cold processed. So it's brought in. There's no heat, no chemically. So you have the... I suppose 100% of the raw material. Like, the first thing, like, people ring back, like, even, like, I have a couple of gardeners in Dublin and use it for their lawn, and they'll ring back and say, God, you know, it nearly, like, smells like the ocean here for a couple of hours after spraying it in their back garden. Like, and it's a lovely safe product as well, but it's olive green, and that's the difference, like, because we just retain all the nutrients of the raw material using the process we do.
Yeah, but can you imagine the actual, even the harvesting process, the whole production process has to be a lot less, you know, environmentally impactful as if we go back to traditional fertilizer industry. So in terms of that then, is there, when it comes, like, you know, with the price of fertilizers now, it presents an opportunity for a business like yourselves. Have you got that scalability, and are you getting any assistance with that? Like, are you engaged with Enterprise Ireland or the local enterprise offices?
Yeah, definitely. We've... the local enterprise board has really been really good to us there in the last 2 years, because, as I say, down to the the years of ups and downs of any business, you know, we've weathered the storm, and I suppose we see the light at the end of the tunnel. But definitely the Enterprise Board has really been helpful, you know, when fertilizer prices went through the roof. Obviously, it's people sit up and they start looking for something else at that stage, because it's only when they've really been hitting the pocket. So definitely Enterprise Board is very good, and we just keep doing what we're doing.
And is there an export potential for your product?
We have a lot of, as I was saying to you just off air there, you know, the Enterprise Board, I send so much up to the north of Ireland, you know, I never actually seen it as an export, but they're being told it is. We sell an awful lot of it to the UK, both the granular seaweed supplements to the UK and our liquid. And we have products going to, in a granular form for animal feeds and in feed production. We've gone over to Portugal, Spain, and Poland. The Polish company added in actually to pet food as bulking up pet food, extra nutrients.
And, you know, is Irish seaweed different than what you might get elsewhere in the world then? Is that what opens up that export market?
Absolutely, yeah, because the seaweed we have is Aquasylum anosum, so it's a knotted rack seaweed. You don't get it's you'll get it in the northwest coast of, well, all around Ireland has it because of the cold water. You'll get it kind of up in Scotland, up into the Nordic countries, you'll get a certain amount. But Ireland's renowned for it because it's and the thing about it is it is really renewable, because like when the harvesters harvest one plot, they move on to the next, move on. And then when they go back to the first plot, it's all regrown again. It's very, very, grows back very, very quickly. So like it's one of our greatest natural resources. Like, and I think it's...
Wow. So 8 years ago, you kind of, dare I say, took the plunge as well. No regrets, obviously.
A few times along the way, Ronan, it came to, you know, in the middle of it all there, I suppose, on a personal level, like I was come close to just losing it all. Like it was just between, you know, a bit of like everyone else, you get a bit depressed and anxiety going on, and you take the eye off the ball, and you know, but you know, you get back on the track, and but look at,
well, looking at your bio here on betterplants.ie, like, you know, and it tells you that you like a challenge. So I think that there's clearly a bit of resilience and determination in you. New York Marathon, Paris Brest Paris, 1,230 kilometre cycle race. I think I'll just stop there, will I, Barry? Climbing the highest mountain in Europe as well. So you know what it's like to face a challenge anyway and overcome it. But look, it is an amazing story, and great to hear it's happening in Mullingar as well, and massive potential. And so maybe the time is just coming right as well to really build on that as well. But Ollie, thanks so much for coming over this evening.
No,
if anybody wants to find out more about Ollie's business, it's betterplants.ie. Huge range of products available for both private and commercial and agriculture use there as well. Check it out and keep continuing to support your great local businesses. Thanks a million, Ollie. The County Arms Hotel in Burr has been a family owned business since 1962. It's a very standout building there. Fantastic hotel, 4-star, offering all the major luxuries and all the various different elements as well that a great hotel does. So to find out a little bit more about it, I'm delighted to be joined by its general manager, Barry Kennedy. Barry, you're back essentially for a second stint in the hot seat as GM there, or back where it all started.
That's correct, Ronan, yeah. I'm back just over a year now. I'm originally from Burr, so lovely to be back home. I started my hotel career in the County Arms a long time ago, way back in 2001. It was my first job in hotels, so got a good grounding there kind of throughout college and so on. And lovely to be back now in my hometown, managing what I believe is one of the better hotels in the Midlands.
Yeah, it's still family owned as well, which is, I suppose, it's a real Irish thing having that family owned hotel. You know, is that different? I think people can generally tell sometimes when a hotel is that little bit, it's family owned, or it's a little bit unique as well. Would you see that across industry?
Yeah, certainly, and less the case. But we're very fortunate that the hotel has changed ownership in the last few years, but it's still family owned, and it's still a local family who owned the hotel. So the Gary family took ownership of the hotel during the pandemic, and they're a local family and very keen on seeing the hotel progress and develop, and good commitment from them, which is a big help in my role as general manager, sir.
What are the kind of key areas you're focusing on? I think you've a number of wedding fairs coming up as well. I suppose weddings are always you know, a huge part of any hotel businesses too, but what are your kind of essential services?
Yeah, weddings is massive, and really, really grateful that the wedding business has really bounced back strongly. We had a wedding showcase last weekend, which was fully subscribed, to the point that we have another one now in two weeks' time again, and that's trending very well. So we're on track for a record number of weddings this year, which would be brilliant. And certainly the 2 or 3 years past that are looking very strong at the moment as well.
Are we still playing catch up from 2 years of lockdown with weddings, or is that beginning?
I think last year thought that really kind of fizzled out. The last year was a super year for weddings. This year it seems to be kind of back to pre-pandemic numbers of regards to wedding inquiries and stuff, but we're still very grateful that we're enjoying good numbers at the moment.
And you're still enjoying the job anyway?
Very much so, yeah, very much so. Similar, listen to Ollie there. It's a passion too, and you know, Ollie changed his career, but clearly has a passion for what he does, and I think people in my line of work, you kind of fall into it, but you would find it very difficult to do anything else. So yeah, I love it at the moment. Yeah.
So it was for the family that owned now the Garry's, like having bought the hotel during a pandemic, very interesting times in this country as well. And it's often it's widely reported that, say, the hotel tourism sector in particular has possibly felt the brunt of COVID and all the lockdowns and the restrictions and all the nuances it brought as well, with how you had to deliver a service and that type of thing as well. How has it been for the County Arms, kind of now that we're kind of coming out of that COVID period?
Yeah, listen, it was a very, very challenging time throughout the country for our sector. But we also became very adaptable, and we found new ways of doing business. And some of those have maintained. I mean, an example being the wedding showcase last weekend. In the past, wedding showcases were almost a free-for-all, and that couples just arrived at any time, and you were lucky to get to speak to them all. Whereas what we've done since pandemic is we've continued the appointment only kind of strategy, and that allows us to spend quality time with couples. So you know, we had 4 people selling weddings last weekend, and each person had an hourly slot, and that gave you good quality time with each couple, and allowed you to, I suppose, to sell correctly and to explain the various options available to them well. And we're noticing that the conversion rate is actually higher with that platform, which is good.
So was Doreen. One of the primary reasons you're here this evening too is that, and as aside from your job as the General Manager of the County Arms as well, you also are the Chair of the Midlands Branch of the Irish Hotels Federation. It, of course, is a national organisation of hotel and guest houses. There's over 1,000 hotels and guest houses represented by the IHF. You have recently written, though, to TDs and other elected officials as well to kind of an open letter to outline some of your concerns around the real challenges that the sector is facing. Take us through maybe some of the primary ones of those, and we can go into them in a bit of detail as well.
Sure. Yeah, well, I suppose the primary issue at the moment is the cost, and we're seeing that in all sectors and every household in the country as well. But costs in hospitality have really spiralled. Things like electricity and energy costs have gone up as high as 400% on 2019 levels in some properties. Food and beverage suppliers, you know, the costs have skyrocketed, right down to things like linen and other services. Even today, I spent most of the day in the office in the hotel, and 3 different emails from 3 different suppliers. One beverage, which is in the news already, and
yep. 12%
on Diageo. Yeah. One from one of our bigger food suppliers with on various items. One item with a 69% increase. Another from a service we have a contract with. So, you know, and that's unfortunately, that's most weeks. And
you can't just turn around to those suppliers and say, we're not doing that. I mean, the first one you mentioned, they're widely publicised today. You know, it's a national organisation, so they're not going to budge on that. So maybe going back to suppliers to renegotiate is probably not really an option, or maybe it is. How do you then look about kind of, you know, absorbing that? Like, you can't absorb that cost level. Is that then, say, impacting on the extent of a menu can be offered, or the length of sittings? Like, how does an organisation or a company deal with that?
Yeah, at the beginning, most places tried to absorb, but it just became impossible. A lot of it is unfortunately passed on to the customer, some properties have taken the approach of reducing down menu sizes and items on menus. My particular hotel that I can really only speak about in this area is food is so important to us. You know, food and beverage will be 65-70% of our turnover. So the quality of what we offer has to be right. So we're not in a position to do that. But at the same time, there is only so much you can pass on. You know, so it's really a really challenging time. And I suppose with the impending increase in VAT, that just adds to those pressures.
Yeah, that is one that, I mean, from the time it was brought in, bringing the VAT rate down to 9%, it's due to go back up to 13.5%. Is it next month, or is it
the end of February?
End of February, yeah. As things stand, that's happening as well. Have you had any response from anyone in government around the VAT rate? I know they've probably tried to bat it away because they have done. I mean, the last budget they were kind of adamant that it's coming back in. But have you had any response so far?
Yeah, we as a federation have been lobbying hard in the last few months, and probably mixed messages of what we've been receiving back from government. We're hoping that in the coming weeks we can make some headway. Ultimately, it's down to protecting jobs really and livelihoods. I look after the Midlands branch of the Hotel Federation, which is Laois, Offaly, Westmead, Longford and Kildare. And in that area of the country, we employ almost 24,000 people in the hotel sector. And, you know, those, certainly in my hotel in Borough, we have 140 employees. Each one of those employees live locally. They contribute into the local economy. They do their shopping, they socialise and so on. And that's an important that's an important factor to consider when looking at the VAT.
It's huge numbers, and I often say that anyone you're talking involved with hotels, the actual number of staff to have in the books, it's always frightening, you know, because when you think 24/7 operations and all the different events and that, you know, it's supporting that many jobs even in this region is huge as well. But the VAT rate goes, it's not just around cost control, it really is around attracting, you know, visitors, and not just Irish visitors but overseas as well. So like, Your argument that this is about competitiveness really, isn't it, and making Ireland that attractive destination for a foreign tourist?
Sure. I mean, if the VAT is to go to 13.5% at the end of February, it will make Ireland the second highest VAT rate in the European Union, just behind Denmark. Currently, we're kind of in mid-table. Like countries such as Switzerland, Romania, Luxembourg, Portugal, you know, they're all 6% and under. I don't think we're expecting to go below 9%, but I think if the government are serious about tourism in this country, increasing VAT in the current climate is just the wrong move.
That's coming, I suppose, at the end of the month anyway, or the end of February, which, look, at hopefully there's time there to change it as well. My studio guest is Barry Kennedy, the General Manager of the County Arms Hotel in Borough. Barry's also the Chair of the Midlands branch of the Irish Hotels Federation. And before the break, we were just looking at some of the challenges and indeed some of the staggering numbers behind the industry. And our most reasoning was looking at the 9% VAT rate that is due to go back to 13.5% at the end of February. And Barry was outlining, you know, the challenges it presents, particularly from a competitiveness perspective, excuse me. But Barry, I suppose I said before the break, we might look at occupancy levels. Where are things now compared to where they were? I suppose, I mean, things fell off a cliff in 2020 for probably far longer than any of us expected. So where are now, I suppose, for yourselves and for the industry in general?
Yeah, I suppose it's people will know from me around the country, hotels are busy. And with the current costs we touched on earlier, my theory is you need to be busy to kind of ride it out and to keep the volume high. So there's certainly a pent-up demand from people who couldn't get away for the best part of 2 years. That's been a help. There's a lot of our bedroom stock around the country is also contracted to government for refugees and so on, and that has led to a shortage of supply, which has driven up occupancy rates around the country too. But and in some areas of the country, it's proven more of a challenge than others. So ultimately, occupancy rates at the moment are high. The year ahead, it's probably not as promising looking as the year just gone, and that's purely, I suppose, people are feeling the pinch a little bit with the cost of living and so on. But the lead time will be quite short outside of the cities for room occupancy. So we're seeing kind of a 2 and 3 week lead time for bedrooms at the moment.
And events like, you know, the invasion in Ukraine as well, that does that have a knock on effect? Do you see a difference, or do you see a change in maybe behaviour in terms of European travel from potential guests or tourists?
Yes, a little. But Dublin is still busy with overseas travellers, slowly and surely coming back to what it would have been prior to COVID. But as I said, the shortage of stock in Dublin is the issue there, really.
When it comes then to looking at, and I suppose addressing the rise in cost, and even during the break here, you were just telling myself, and Ollie Green is actually still in the studio here as well, but we were just kind of outlining like some of this, the scale of some of the increases that are put upon you, and there's only so far, there's only so many of you can go back to the consumer as well. As a business, are there any things that you can look at? Like, I mean, are there any incentives to do something like installing renewable energies, or like, you know, what's happening behind the scenes there? Are government or the various agencies offering you support, or at least showing you a pathway out of this?
Yeah, there's been quite a lot of action in that area, and I would say our own federation, Hotel Federation, have been very proactive. We've put a lot of procedures in place in our own hotel in terms of, we've our own green team now. We have I probably go around the hotel four times a day turning things off, but the team are really coming on board with that too, and everyone appreciates the importance of it. There are certainly there are plenty of various kind of grants and supports there from Sustainability Ireland, from Hotel Federation, from Fáilte Ireland as well. There's plenty of support there, and it's all needed. It's all needed at the moment.
Yeah, because I suppose, like, on top of all that, looking at, you know, your energy supply and where you get it, you've got the thing of maybe the growth of, like, even electric vehicles, you know, potential suppliers coming down with electric vans as well. Hotels have got to start catering for that too. So, I mean, it seems relentless and unending for you. How do you plan to manage all that? Like, and what, again, on an industry level, what's happening within the hotel sector to cater for that, I mean, seismic shift in terms of what the consumer will need?
Yeah, and I would say as a sector, we're not quite there yet with that. We currently in our hotel, we don't have charging points for electric cars. It's something we are looking at in the next while. But I had a guest recently who had to go across to the local Tesco to get charging, and that's so. I think as a sector, we're not well positioned for that just yet. But there's so many other challenges kind of coming at us. It's almost like a tsunami at the moment. That
I think, in fairness, it's not just your sector. I think even, you know, every town centre isn't equipped for that. Yeah, for that, the scale of what's happening yet. Anyway, but the one thing about it is, I mean, which the optimism, the enthusiasm for the sector is still there as well. So there seems to be, there is a sense from you that you will ride this out as well, and the future is looking relatively bright for the sector too.
Yeah, I believe so. I think everything passes eventually, and I think. Similar to, I think we all learned a lot of lessons during COVID and the last crash back 2008-2009. And my belief, and a lot of my colleagues around the country's belief, would be that if you can keep the standards high, and we're very fortunate in Ireland, we've got a wonderful product, and if we can keep the product high and keep the quality high, and come out the other side, we'll be in a better position.
Sure, your own location in Burr, I mean, it is, I'm sure there's people from around the world look going like, wow, what a location. And I know even recently Olive Farley, the tourism officer, was speaking to Offaly County Council again, just showing the work that they're doing to try to promote Offaly, and still probably the region is just untapped in terms of its potential. Would you agree?
100%, yeah, and Olive does super work, and it's important to say that, yeah. But we're very lucky in Burr. Obviously, we've got the castle, we're very close proximity to the Slieve Blooms, which is really thriving at the moment. And short spin from places like Bora, and there's so many great golf courses, and that sector, that area is well resourced around us too. So we're very, very fortunate.
And I'd say a lot of those golf courses, potentially Ollie Green, probably putting seaweed-based fertilisers on, are they?
Yeah, we have a good few golf courses there now around the Midlands that's using the products, that just using it for the greens, just to keep them in better shape, because to find the recovery back on the grass is far better with it, so.
There you go now. Lovely, yeah. Lovely full circle. But Barry, Gary, thanks so much for coming this evening as well, and talking to us about the County Arms Hotel, and indeed the work that the IHF are doing as well to try to highlight the issues that the sector has, and hopefully all comes good and everything is back to the way it was, and no more of those emails looking for 69% price increases just on a Tuesday morning anyway. Thanks a million, Barry.
Can I just mention, thank you very much, Ronan, just when I have the opportunity, wedding showcase in the County Arms Hotel, Saturday 21st, Sunday the 22nd of January. As I mentioned at the beginning, there are very busy time for weddings, obviously just past Christmas, but we'd love to see any couples. So anyone who wants to make an appointment, weddings at countyarmshotel.com or any of our social media platforms.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Barry.
Thanks,
and all the very best, and talk to you again soon. And that is it for Taking Care of Business for this evening. It's a huge thank you to Barry Kennedy there, to Ollie Green, of course, from betterplans.ie, and at the start of the show as well, Sharon Farrell from Face Credit Consultancy, really talking about what you need to do in terms of looking at the credit terms you have in place for your business. And I suppose we started off speaking about credit terms and ultimately almost finished up talking about the same thing. But again, great to hear what companies, what sectors are doing to try to mitigate rising costs, particularly when you see what Ollie has done as well in bringing alternatives to the market, organic, natural alternatives to kind of industry and heavily energy intensive products that I suppose we just got used to using over the years. So lots happening here in Taking Care of Business. I'll be back next Tuesday with even more stuff to talk about and what's happening around this great region of ours and all the great and fantastic businesses.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.